You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. I am, as always, Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at fearthestore.com. If you aren't already, find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Himalaya, Luminary, wherever you get your shows, get Locked On Cavs. Find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrites. The podcast is on all those social media platforms at Locked On Cavs as well. So today's show is a conversation with Orion Tsang. He covers University of Michigan athletics for the Free Press, the Detroit Free Press up in Michigan. He's a University of Michigan grad as well. You can find him on Twitter at Orion_Tsang. He was a really good guest. You'll learn a lot about John Beilein, how Orion thinks his offense is going to translate to the NBA. I think we're in a position now where we're starting to learn quite a bit about Beilein as we sort of get into the numbers, get into a whole bunch of other stuff. Those conversations are going to continue to happen. John Beilein also is finally going to speak to the local media in his first official press conference, his introductory press conference on Tuesday. It's at 11 a.m. You'll be able to stream that live at cavs.com/live. I will be there. I'll be live tweeting some stuff, and then you'll have a podcast on that sometime Tuesday evening when I get home from the day job. So John Beilein talking Tuesday for the first time as Cavs coach. In other Cavs news, they did hire J.B. Bickerstaff as the associate head coach. That has been officially announced by the team as well. I think it's a great move for the team. I think it's a really good move to get Beilein someone who has NBA experience, someone who has the understanding of what it takes to get through an 82-game season, what it takes for a team to really navigate this as opposed to the two games we had college season. And also, Bickerstaff seems to be liked by the guys he coached up in Memphis. So I think that is I think the right hire. I think it's a good pairing with Beilein. He seems, again, to be coming in with no ego into all of this, which is, I think, a really good sign. But I think the Cavs are doing a lot of smart stuff so far. So we'll see what Kobe and we'll see what John say on Tuesday. That's Kobe Altman, Jeff Beilein. But it's starting to pick up a little bit. Business is picking up. They're obviously picking fifth. They have about a month until the draft, literally a month from yesterday. And this next month is going to be a pretty pivotal month for the Cavs. But now you're going to hear me on Orion Tsang and talking about John Beilein from a whole bunch of angles. But also want to let you know that today's podcast has a bunch of great sponsors. First, Hotels.com. Today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. Don't hate your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com. Be there. Do that. Get rewarded. Today's show is also brought to you by Untuck It. Dads come in all shapes and sizes, and so should their shirts, like tall, short, slim, and relaxed. Ever wonder why your father's button-ups look so long and baggy at the end of the day? It can be hard for guys to pull off a casual untucked look that isn't sloppy. So that's where Untuck It comes in. Untuck It is the solution that fits just right. Their shirts are specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to untuckit.com, promo code NBA, get 20% off. And lastly, today's show is brought to you by Grip 6 Belts. Grip 6 Belts are literally the best belt. That is their goal. That is their goal, to make the best belt that has ever been made. Grip 6 is an easy, thoughtful gift for dads, brothers, husbands, uncles, grandpas, and even moms and wives. Check out their women's collection. It's an ultra-lightweight product with no holes, no flap, and it carries a low profile with the buckle laying flat against the waist, making the belt super comfortable. Grip 6 is the only belt with no holes, no flap, and no bulk. Grip 6 has a special offer for you right now at grip6.com/lock. That's L-O-C-K-E. But without further ado, here is today's conversation with Orion Tsang. Again, John Beilein, 11 a.m. talking in Cleveland. We'll have a full recap of love at Fear the Sword and on Locked On Cavs. Talk to you tomorrow. Joining me now is Orion Tsang. He's a reporter for the Free Press, covers Michigan, went to Michigan as well. How's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So we touched on this as we were kind of chatting before we started recording, but this was a move that I think in my world, covering the NBA, covering the Cavs, came out of nowhere. This was a move that his name was not one we had heard linked to the Cavs job, to an NBA job this year. Of course, people know he was, you know, interviewed for the Pistons job and everything last year. But for you, when you looked at this covering Michigan and what beeline jumping at this point, how surprising was that to you?
Yeah, so the timing of the move and maybe the team itself were surprising, but him leaving for the NBA isn't that shocking. Former players said this as well, but based on what happened last year, and he was also on the Detroit Pistons list back in 2014, this is something that I think he's always wanted to try. Not always, I guess. I'll backtrack there. This is something I think he's wanted to try, and then something he's thought about in recent years. And I think he's always he's wanted to give the NBA a shot. And this is a really good opportunity for him to do so. It's close to Ann Arbor, which is where he said his wife, Kathleen, and his grandkids will stay. He's working with Mike Stanzi, who he described as like a son to him. That was a guy he coached at West Virginia. So it's a good fit for him. He's always been the type of guy who likes to come in and rebuild programs, and he'll be rebuilding the Cavs. So it's a good fit for him, and the move, I guess, isn't that shocking. I guess I'll say the timing is.
So you were in Chicago, where he obviously was for the draft lottery and then the combine. People can go back to your Twitter feed and take a look at some of the things he said, and you wrote about it as well. But in terms of what he actually said about the move, did you feel like you learned anything significant from what he said in Chicago?
I guess. It didn't take them that long to make a decision. He said this was the right thing to do. So that, I guess, hints at this has been an ongoing desire for him to coach the NBA. And this also squares with our perception of him as a pure coach, because he said he wanted a chance to coach basketball at the NBA. And he's known as an X's and O's guy. And he won't really say this. He hasn't said it publicly, at least, but the sense is that some of the other stuff in college basketball, like the recruiting, dealing with all the other stuff, really, I guess, wasn't something that he necessarily wanted to keep doing, maybe. But I think he'll do well at the NBA level in terms of scheme, X's and O's. My biggest question would be how he adjusts to NBA personalities going forward.
So when you look at him as a guy interacting with college players, interacting, kind of being like the head of that family, that organization, what is he like as a coach? Like, what is he like in relating to college players and leading them? It seems like he's pretty well liked, and he seems like the way he runs his offense empowers guys. But what is he like in that environment where he's, you know, currently leading like a bunch of guys that he's personally recruited and brought in to fit what he does?
Yeah, so we talked to Ignas Brazdeikis because at the combine, and someone asked him if he would describe Bjorn as the father figure, and Brazdeikis said no, he wouldn't. But he would give Bjorn a lot of credit in his development and his success at Michigan. I think that's the best way to put it, is that he's not necessarily like a father figure type to most of his players, but he is a teacher. He's a mentor, and players love him because he gets them to play to their full ability at in college. He gets them to the next level. I think that's where the admiration comes from. He's a teacher. He knows how to get the most out of his players.
So what is it about him? Is it? I think we'll get into his scheme and you mentioned that you think he'll do well. We'll get into that. But what do you think he, as a person, like, what do you think it is about him as a coach that allows him to get a lot of the guys? You can look at the list, right? And there's a bunch of guys like Trey Burke and Nick Stauskas, and you go down the list of guys that were not top 100 recruits that made it to the NBA. So what is it about him that seems to, in terms of a personality, bring the best out of guys?
I think part of it is his development. I don't know if anyone would have predicted what Trey Burke did at Michigan. He was basically, I mean, he was a nation's top player his sophomore year. And coming out of high school, at one point he was committed to Penn State. So BNI did a really good job in getting Trey Burke to be a really good ball handler, creator, distributor. But he was also really good at attacking the rim. He was able to hit shots off the dribble. And I think a lot of that goes to development. The same thing goes with Caris LeVert and Nick Stauskas, because Caris LeVert was a 5% plus 3-point shooter his second year in Michigan as a sophomore. and he barely played as a freshman. He was like a bench guy. And his sophomore year, he broke out. His last 2 years, he was injured, but his sophomore year was really the year where he sort of became a star. Stauskas, his first year at Michigan, he was basically just a shooter. And his sophomore year, he became this guy who could work off of ball screens, he could drive, he could create for others, he became a more complete offensive player. So I think Beilein's development is definitely shown in a number of guys he's taken from relatively unknown and unheralded recruits to NBA lottery picks, NBA first-round draft picks.
What is he like in terms of a game day? Like, obviously, when you're covering a college team, like the playing schedule is different. I don't know how often he would hold media availability, but there's less of a day-to-day grind that there is in the NBA. What is he like in terms of games? Like in terms of how he reacts to them, how he will react to a big win or a big loss. Like what is just the general, sort of approach and mood of a John Beilein?
I guess he uses every loss as a teaching point, really. And it goes back to him just being a teacher. He's never really too down after losses. He just sort of explains what goes on, what went wrong. And he says, he'll use it with his team, to get it right the next time around. After wins, it's the same thing. He never really gets too high. He's not too emotional after wins. He just talks about what the team needs to do the next time around. So I think he's very grounded when it comes to that sense.
So, okay, let's get into the scheme. You mentioned that you think his scheme will fit the NBA, that you think it'll be something that should work. I think there will be some adaptments of it, certainly, because the court's just different size, the pace of play is a little different, et cetera. But what about what he does do you think will translate? And just for people that maybe aren't familiar with what Beilein does, describe what his scheme, just the basic things that he likes to do are.
Yeah, so basically he's evolved over the years. But what he currently does is he runs a really ball-screen-heavy offense. And everything is initiated by the point guard, Xavier Simpson. He had really high usage last year for Michigan. And I guess I'll explain some of Simpson's strengths and weaknesses. He's not a really good three-point shooter. He's not a volume three-point shooter, and he's not efficient on his attempts. But what he is he does have really good vision, and then Michigan played to his strengths by running a lot of high ball screens. And when teams hedged, Simpson tore them apart. When teams switched, Michigan struggled a lot this past season. I guess the part that translates to the NBA is the usage of ball screens. I'm not the biggest NBA guy, but when I do watch, I notice there's always ball screen. It seems like that's a heavy part of NBA offenses. So I think that's part of why I said that I think his team will translate, because what he does is just similar to what NBA teams have been doing. He also likes to spread the floor. He had Mo Wagner as the five last year when they went to the title game. And Mo, as you know, is a stretch five. He's had other guys in the past, but Mark Dinell comes to mind, but none really were like Mo in being able to stretch the floor. And I think in the NBA, I look at the roster, I see Kevin Love, the guy who could maybe play a huge role in Beilein's offense with Cleveland.
When you look at him in terms of personalities, it's something that I think is a really interesting question, because NBA players are different. Like they have more, they're just making more money. And I think that brings a certain level of difference. Like they're guys that have a little bit more autonomy for themselves. Kevin Love, Jordan Clarkson, these are guys that have been NBA players, successful in their own ways and independent in some ways. I know Brazikas is a guy that had like a bit of a spunk to him that other guys might not have, but how has he dealt with like personalities that maybe aren't like exactly like just kind of towing the line, and that's maybe an unfair way to frame it, but like how does he interact with guys that maybe have that little bit of personality or have that sense of autonomy on themselves in some way?
Right. So he's been more open with it recently. This past team had Xavier Simpson. They had Jordan Poole. And as you mentioned, they had Ignas Brazdeikis. I think he's evolved to the point where he's not as maybe, as stubborn as he used to be. He would let Brazdeikis celebrate, play pretty freely at times. Simpson, he basically handed control of the offense to Simpson. But I still think he likes to do things his way. I think there's one moment I remember, it was at Michigan State this year, and they lost. And Michigan State was going on a huge run. And Beilein called for a timeout, and Simpson sort of walked the ball over to the sidelines, and it looked like he was going to call the timeout, and then he just took off towards the rim. And he actually got an open three out of it, but Michigan missed a three. And then eventually Beilein got the timeout called. But he was pissed about that. He was definitely frustrated with that. So I guess that would be probably the best way to sum it up. He's less stubborn than he used to be, but he still likes to do things his way.
What do you think of as his the biggest obstacles for him being a successful head coach? It seems like he is coming into this with no ego and like is, you know, letting JB Bickerstaff come in and be his assistant. Seems like at least they're spinning it as he courted that guy. So what do you see would seem to be the big obstacles he might face in that transition? Because this will be the first time he's coaching the NBA. He's never been an assistant before, quite famously.
Yeah. I think it's what we touched upon, I think it's just adjusting to NBA players and how to coach them. It's different from college players. I mean, in college, he handpicked every single player on his roster. In the NBA, that's not going to happen. So I think it's getting used to developing relationships with players, which he says he's trying to do and has started to do, and making sure they trust him and have that strong bond that's necessary to win for the next level. I also think he'll need help from the front office. I look at the roster. I'm not really sure where the Cavs are going to go from here, but it seems like it's a pretty barren roster. Young, but needs more pieces. So I guess that would be my answer.
Based on what you know about the guys on the Cavs roster, and obviously you mentioned you're more of a college guy and an NBA guy right now, but when you look at that roster, are there any guys that like strike you as guys that would seem to fit Beeline's, what Beeline likes in players? And is there anyone in this draft class that we have coming up, the Cavs obviously picking number 5, that strikes you as a guy that would fit what he does?
Yeah, so I think based on what I saw from Colin Sexton, and it wasn't too much, but it seemed like over the second half of the season, he was a much improved player, and his three-point shooting improved greatly. So I think if you get the version of Colin Sexton that's like a 40% three-point shooter, which I think is around where he finished the year at, I mean, that seems like the type of point guard that would work well in Beeline's offense. He can create. He's pretty explosive. He's a good shooter. I guess if things had turned out differently, looking at the draft, I would have said someone like Darius Garland maybe would have been a good fit there, or maybe even Coby White. But I think Sexton proved that he has some potential. I think they'll probably work with him. Looking at other names, Cam Reddish seems like a guy that might work there. I guess DeAndre Hunter, too. Both of them can shoot. Reddish has some potential. And I think Beeline would relish the opportunity to develop guys who seem like they still have a lot of untapped potential, especially when it comes to Reddish. Well, those are some names that stick out to me, I guess.
So what about Reddish? Hunter, I think, obviously, the appeal of him being like a 3-and-D guy is there. And Reddish obviously played, you know, at Duke with R.J. Barrett and Zion. What about what Reddish is as a prospect and sort of what we've seen from him? Do you think fits what Beeline likes to do? Like, is there, like, a type of role that he sort of might try to, like, would slide a guy like Reddish into?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thought there would be, If they got Reddish, maybe they'd be able to turn him into more of a ball handler, more of a creator. I think he didn't really do much at Duke, but I still think he has a lot of potential. His shooting stroke was inconsistent, but, I mean, it did seem fine to me. Like, there weren't any – it didn't seem like there were technical issues in it. I think maybe they could look to improve that. And he's also just a really talented athlete as well. So I think all of those things play in his favor. And he'll also be there at 5, I figure. So
yeah.
The type of prospect I think that he would be interested in, this is just my speculation, of course, but I feel like they're in a decent spot at 5. Obviously, you're not going to get Zion Williamson or Ja Morant or R.J. Barrett probably, but there's a lot of guys I think that he would be intrigued in.
When you look at the guys from Michigan that will be in this draft, I think, is it correct me if I'm wrong, it's Jordan Poole and Brazikas are the two guys in the draft, correct?
Yeah, so there's three. There's Brazdeikis, Jordan Poole, and Charles Matthews. And those guys, yeah. So those guys, I guess Brazdeikis is maybe in play at 26. He's more of a late first to second round type of guy. Jordan Poole is late second. Charles Matthews is late second as well. I'm not sure what the odds are that any of the three will reunite with Beeline. At the very least, I'm guessing that a couple of them, maybe all of them, would work out with the Cavs because of the familiarity there. But they're definitely not in play at 5, and maybe Brazdeikis would be in play at 26, and I don't know about the other two in the second round. It's pretty tough to look ahead at that stuff now, I guess.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But I'm curious if, like, he had, like, a certain attachment to any of those guys. If there's, like, a guy that, like, he – like, was he – like, I, you know this guy. Coaches seem to have guys they really like for whatever reason. Was he, like, a particular fan of any of those three guys in a way that would, like, you'd think, okay, he might try to nab him as, like, a second-round pick or maybe Brazdeikis at 26, like you mentioned? Like, are any of those guys, like, were they quintessential Beeline guys last year for Michigan?
To answer that question, I think I'd probably say Matthews would be the closest fit. Matthews signed with Kentucky at a high school. He played a year, then he transferred. Michigan went after him hard and signed him. And he sat out a year, and in the past 2 years, he was a key player on the past two teams. And Beilein and him have a pretty good relationship, pretty tight relationship. Matthews has given Beilein a lot of credit for helping them grow both on and off the court. So if I had to pick one of the three, it'd probably be Matthews, because he has most familiarity with Beilein. He's been there the longest. They know each other the longest compared to the other two. But I don't know if you would make a decision to pick players or advocate for a decision to pick players based on who he's tight with. I think he's the type of coach that would, I guess, look for the best fit for a team, regardless of whether he knows the player or not. The other thing is he does have this unique aspect in that he's actually recruited a decent amount of the guys that are in the draft this year, obviously. I've seen them play in AAU. When I talked to him at the combine, we were chatting a little bit, and he mentioned that he's seen Simi Shitu play before, he's seen Chris Folks play before, hosted Chris Folks for a visit. Like he knows some of these guys around the country that are in a draft this year, so I think that's interesting. Something to look for, I guess.
Yeah, no, and I wonder what he thinks of. I mean, he might know, like having watched Reddish a thought. I wonder if he like feels like that's a guy that seems like his stock is down right now. But I wonder, maybe Beilein in his desire to coach guys up that kind of fits there. We'll wrap this up. Kind of looking at the Michigan side of this, what has the reaction been like in Ann Arbor to him leaving? It seems like it caught some people off guard. But what has it been like post him leaving? Now that they don't have a coach yet, it seems like that list of candidates is starting to come. But what has it been like post John Beilein in Ann Arbor?
I mean, he's the winningest coach in program history. So I guess from that you can sort of imagine the type of reaction that those in Ann Arbor had. But he's irreplaceable, quite simply. He came to Ann Arbor at a time when Michigan basketball was really down and had been for basically over a decade. And then he sort of revived the program. He was a clean coach. And obviously, you know, Michigan has some history with getting in trouble. He's a clean coach. Development, didn't have any problems with the team off the court. And he won a lot. So he's essentially probably, I guess you can call him a legend at Michigan. And it's going to be hard for him to find someone to replace him because he's just irreplaceable.
Does it feel like there? Because he obviously made Final Fours, never won a title. But does it feel like he? Do you feel like his legacy at Michigan, just because of how he turned around the program and stuff? Is it just secure? Like, is it just like, aside from the national title, did he kind of do everything he possibly could have done there?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, you look at Michigan basketball; it wasn't really talked about when he arrived there. It kind of fallen by the wayside in terms of reputation and production. And now you look at Michigan. I describe it as a national brand, I guess is what I'm saying. He's brought it back. He's resurrected it. They've been really competitive. They've won a lot of games. So he's left quite the legacy at Michigan.
Wrap it up on this. Friday, or Tuesday, excuse me, because I don't know what date it is at this point. John Beilein will make his first, quote-unquote, officially obviously talk to you and other people in Chicago, but he's going to have his introductory press conference in Cleveland on Tuesday. What would you just say are some of the – are you expecting him to, like – are there any specific things, like, that he hasn't talked about yet that you kind of want to see what he has to say in regards to, you know, why he left or him taking the job? Is there anything you feel like will be interesting to see what he has to say about it on Tuesday?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be more interested in hearing what specifically – if there's anything at the college game or about the college game that led him to maybe leave. Obviously, he talked about, you know, the situation in Cleveland and how that was a draw, but I'm curious to see if anyone asked him about, you know, recruiting and you know, the corruption scandal, if that was part of the reason that why he left college basketball for the NBA. And I don't think I don't think he'd answer it, but, I mean, he said he doesn't really want to talk about that. So we'll see. But I'd be curious to hear what his thoughts are on that topic.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting just because I think there's like a lot of stuff he could get asked about. Kobe Altman, the Cavs GM, will be there as well. I think there's just like a lot of interesting things that should come out of this because it'll be the first time they've spoken in this very sort of public way where it'll be super accessible. It's probably the last time you'd think they'd be accessible before the draft. So I think it'll just be an interesting day. And Beilein, I think that's kind of one of the questions that should be atop of people's list to see what he has to say is about why he left. But thanks again to Orion Tseng from the Detroit Free Press. Find him on Twitter at Orion_Sang. Again, thanks to Hotels.com, Untuckit, and Grip Six Belts for sponsoring today's show. And be sure to check out the links to those great partners for the Locked On Podcast Network in the show notes below. Again, back tomorrow, recapping what John Beilein has to say today in Cleveland in his first media availability with the local media. It should be an interesting day. Have a great Tuesday. This has been Locked On Cavs for May 21st. I'm Chris Manning. Talk to you tomorrow.